Okay, welcome back. And we have a rare opportunity again to spend some time with Russell Bentley. Born in America, he is a citizen now of Russia, lives in Donetsk, and he has been reporting, it's going on almost 9 years now on this program, since the original overthrow of Ukraine by this vile and rotten government, with alleged government that we have here, evil. And it's never been more so than it is right now. Russell, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Jeff, great to be back with you again, my friend.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Let me just start right off. In the last couple of days, there have been a few stories that I've seen that seem to indicate that Russia is beginning to move forward into the territory of conquest. They're moving. They're not static. They're beginning to move. And at least half a dozen towns, villages, have been recaptured or liberated by Russia is the correct word. What's the real story there? Are they moving? Is the ground frozen? Is that part of it? Is the new general making a big difference?
The new general is making a big difference. We are moving forward. The ground is not frozen yet. It's still above freezing here. It hasn't really snowed yet. Uh-huh. It's getting pretty chilly, but, you know, it's just right on that above and below freezing temperatures right now. So the good news is that we've made progress. I mean, the thing that's been the problem all along, particularly in the Donbass area, is that the Ukrainian army is right on the edge of our cities. I mean, literally on the city limits. That's the front line, the fighting line. And they've had 8 years in these areas to build up, you know, heavy duty, you know, cement trucks coming in every day. They've made really strong, you know, bunkers and, you know, just pillboxes and that whole deal. So to attack them from the front would be like a suicide mission, basically, to try and bust through these bunkers from the front. So the plan has always been to encircle them from behind and come in from the back so that we don't have to face quite as much, you know, reinforced concrete. And that's what we're doing now. We really are making some good progress. And, you know, I mean, the idea that Russia could lose was never really realistic. I mean, Russia has always had the ability to handle Ukraine, the Ukrainian army. It has the ability to handle NATO plus Ukraine in Ukraine. And that's what we're doing. I mean, they've always been conscious of minimizing civilian casualties and even soldier casualties on both sides, you know. So that's what's been the slowdown. There were some mistakes that were made, but they're being corrected in a very strong fashion. And, you know, there's no other possible outcome than that Russia will be victorious and take as much of Ukraine as they feel necessary for their security vis-a-vis the denazification and demilitarization of Ukraine.
The other story that is of particular concern is 770 or some odd alleged Ukrainian special forces are massing to try to take the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Any truth to that? What do we know?
It is a major concern. It has been. This is kind of, you could almost say, the Achilles heel of the special operation right now. The Zaporizhia nuclear power plant sits on the eastern side of a very big reservoir that's made with water from the Dnieper River. On the east side, the Russians control. On the west side, the Ukrainian and the NATO Nazis control. And it's the biggest nuclear power plant in all of Europe. It's got four reactors. And the Ukrainians have been shelling it heavily since the Russians took control of it in the very first days of the operation in March of this year. You know, this is like criminally insane. It's, you know, if, I mean, they have hit the storage, the shed where the nuclear rods are kept. They've, you know, they've interfered with the cooling and the operation of the plant. It's really been, you know, criminally insane what they've been doing there. They have made multiple attempts to attack. The Russian military is not on the grounds of the nuclear power station, only like security forces.
Oh, this is now, okay. I didn't know. Excuse me. I didn't know this. Mm-hmm. This is not good.
No, it's not. And I mean, and the thing is, too, and it just goes to show how corrupt, you know, Western so-called institutions are these days. The Russians invited the IAEA, which is the International Atomic Energy Association. It's part of the UN, to come there to the Zaporizhia and show, and so that they could show them, you know, the extreme danger of the Ukrainians shelling this plant. And the IAEA did come, including the head, whose name escapes me right now. I think he's Spanish. And they came there, and they looked around for like one day. And then they all, the big group left, and they left a couple of guys there for a couple of more days, and that was it. But, you know, and then they go back, and they said, yes, it's extremely dangerous. You know, the shelling could cause a giant nuclear accident, but we're not really sure who's doing the shelling, you know, which is, you know, ridiculous on its face because, you know, it's, I mean, ballistics from artillery shells.
Yes, yes.
You know, you can look at a hole in the ground that's made by an artillery shell, and you can tell by the size of the hole what caliber it was. When you know the caliber of it, you know the maximum range of it. You can look at the shape of the crater and know, you know, within, you know, 10 or 15 degrees where it was shot from, you know. So looking at a hole in the ground, you can tell what kind of weapon and basically how far away it was and what direction it was. And so for them to say, we don't know, I mean, and they literally said, we don't know who's doing the shooting. And I mean, it's contemptible ridiculous because the Russians aren't, you know, and they've tried this line many times. Oh, the Russians are shelling themselves. The Russians are shelling Russian people in Donetsk like that. I mean, and it's ridiculous, and it's just an absolute lie. So there is some rumors that are very disturbing about negotiations that are like, you know, behind closed doors about maybe Russia agreeing to let in like some kind of international peacekeeping force or something like that. But I don't think that's going to happen. It would be an extremely foolish and negative move for the Russians to do that. You know, I mean, you can't trust poisonous snakes or scorpions or mad dogs or Nazis. And so if they were to make some kind of negotiation that allowed, you know, some international, I mean, the IAEA is impossible to trust, and they would be probably the ones that would say, well, we're going to take over this thing. So hopefully that won't be the case, you know, because it would be like, you know, what they call in golf, pencil whipping, you know, where some guy cheats on the scorecard if they can't win on the ground.
Well, the IAEA today said through one bogus news story or another one that they were going to increase their presence at all nuclear plants in Ukraine. That means probably next to nothing, if it's even true. But here's the point. If the outrageous insanity, well, maybe they're not so insane, they're just downright evil, of Kiev goes in there and takes out one of those reactors and turns it into a Fukushima catastrophe, I think that their plan from the beginning was to expect most of the radiation to cover Donbass and wipe it out. Am I wrong?
Well, actually, I mean, that it is quite possible that they would do that. First of all, remember, it's not the people in Kiev that call the shots.
Yes,
you know,
correct.
The Ukrainian
correct.
Government
Brussels.
Is controlled
Brussels.
By
yeah,
the U.S.
Yeah,
government in D.C. and Brussels. But also, yes, you are wrong. If there was a nuclear mishap or disaster or something at the Zaporizhia plant, the majority of the radiation would go west over the rest of Ukraine and then into Europe.
Oh, the wind would. Oh, the wind is running reverse in that area then. So it's not west to east,
yeah.
It's east to west. Well, what the hell's what these people are insane then? That's crazy.
That's what the models that I've seen, and there's been a lot of them, you know, people talking about this. So there's a lot of, you know, they say that it would go over Europe, you know, some over Western Russia, but mainly over Ukraine and Europe. So, I mean.
Interesting. Well, I don't know what the hell they're up to. But if they do have 700, obviously, mercenary-enhanced commandos ready to try to take the plant, is Russia going to try to stop them?
Well, it's they've tried many times so far. The United States recently gave Ukrainian army 40 armored fast attack boats. In the previous attacks that they've made trying to come across this reservoir, they were using like Zodiacs or just like, you know, regular, cigarette type boats, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Russians have seen them coming and dealt with them quite severely. And basically everybody that tried to cross the reservoir didn't go home. But now they've got these armored attack boats, courtesy of the U.S. taxpayer, and 40 of these boats, you know, could probably hold about 700 some odd.
That's
soldiers.
That's not in. Yeah, that's a formidable strategic move. I'm sure the Russians are losing sleep over this to some degree. Unless they've got a plan. Are they going to just lay down an enormous artillery barrage? They'll know when the boats move. They'll have
radar. Yeah, sure, of course. I mean, and you know, they. I'm sure they do have a plan. I mean, it's very clear that with the strategic withdrawal from Kherson, which was, you know, a very difficult thing that had to happen. You know, I mean. The thing, and it's like Alexander Korlikovsky, my old commander from the Vostok Battalion, you know, he said that, you know, the problem is not that you retreated, because if you have to retreat, it's the right move. You know, it's better to retreat than to be surrounded, cut off, and destroyed.
Right.
But the problem is that taking a position or territory or city, whatever, in the first place that you can't hold on to, you know? And so
Understood.
The Russians
Understood.
Did move a little too far ahead in the beginning. Kherson was a good example. They were, you know, in danger of being surrounded. They were on the west side of the river, and so they retreated. It was a very unfortunate situation. You know, the Ukrop Nazis came back in. They're called, they say they're filtering the population. People are being executed in the streets.
God knows how many people they've slaughtered. Who knows?
Yeah, it's a very tough deal. But, you know, it was something that had to be done. You know, war is not fun.
No, the word tactics. Come on. It was a tactical withdrawal. They had to do it. Understood. The bridges were blown. And they finally ended up finishing off the bridges themselves, which they should have, to keep the Ukes from coming across. How much, Russell, this is important. People need to visualize that the river bisects the city, or the area, the region of Kherson.
And actually, unfortunately, it doesn't bisect the city. I mean, 98% of the city is on the western side of the river.
And really?
Yeah, and if you look, you know, if you like zoom in on Google Maps or something, it was a real bummer that we had to evacuate that city, because on the eastern bank, where the Russian army evacuated to, there's a small village about 3 or 4 kilometers from the riverbank itself, and right. between that village and the riverbank, it's basically swamp. There's hardly any roads. The city on the other side is higher elevation. I mean, so it's going to be tough getting back across that river again when we go, and I'm sure we will. But you know, that's in the future. Right now, we're making gains in the Donbass region, which is really very, very good to hear. I mean, we're still have not moved the Ukrainian army off basically the city limits of our major cities, particularly Donetsk.
I was going to ask, are they still on the city limits of Donetsk?
We've moved them back a couple of kilometers, but not far enough. I mean, there was a grad rocket attack last night. A young man was killed filling up his car with gasoline right over by Donbass Arena and the memorial to the liberators of Donetsk or of Donbass. I mean, so, you know, we're still under shelling. There's people dying here in the city pretty much every single day still. But understand that the movement, it's not pushing them forward from the city limits or back from the city limits. It's coming around behind them and then and surrounding them, and then we're going to squeeze them like a big zit.
So they're moving down from the north and up from the south. Or at least that's the idea, to pinch them off.
Yes, that is the idea.
Okay, all right.
I mean, the concern would be that the Ukrainian army and mercenary troops that were concentrated around Kherson to plan on assaulting that city had the Russians tried to hold on to it are now freed up, and they can move from Kherson up to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant is about 100 miles up the river. You know, they can move up there to try and make an attack around the power plant. And, you know, I mean, also it's, you know, and from the nuclear power plant to Donetsk, it's only about 100 miles too. So, you know, it's war. It's a very tough deal. We're fighting for, you know, really the future of humanity, because this is all, it's all part of this, depopulation plan, you know, from
that's what it is. That's right.
Good old Gates and Klaus Schwab.
World Economic Forum, and yes.
You know, that's all right. That stuff. I mean, it's really real. They're really doing it. The same people who were pushing the vaccine are the same people that are screwing up food production and food delivery. And they're the same people that are pushing this war, escalating this war, keeping it going. I mean, it's all the same cabal, the same group of people.
You got it. That's something that the average American will probably, unfortunately, never figure out. But that's 100% correct. I'm always trying to make the point clear that there's one power source at the top. Nothing's happening by accident here. It's all planned, all of it. Here's one more story about Kherson. Kiev turning Kherson into a military base. Kiev ready to write it off. I don't know what that means exactly, but what are they saying here? I mean, I could read a little of the story to you. This is from TASS.
No, I haven't read that story, but I mean, I understand what they're basically saying is that, okay, most of the people, you know, Kherson's a pretty good sized city, and most of the people have left, you know.
Yeah, you pulled a couple hundred thousand out of there in I think 6 weeks or something. You evacuated them.
Yeah, the Russian army did a great job of evacuating people from that city that wanted to go. And, I mean, they've been evacuated to Russia itself. You know, they're getting housing, they're getting food, they're getting taken care of.
Great.
And so the city of Kherson is basically a ghost town now. The Ukrainian army has come in, and what they're doing is they're planning on fortifying it, and then, you know, when Russia eventually gets around to retaking it, they're going to basically do like what they tried to do to Mariupol, which is basically, you know, completely destroy it. You know, like the U.S. Army guy said in Vietnam, we had to destroy the city in order to save it.
To save it. Understood. Understood. All right. I want to make a point here for all of our listeners and get you to step in on this. It's quite clear to me, and I think anyone honestly looking at this, that Russian tactics have been designed from the beginning to spare as many civilian lives as possible. They don't want to kill Russian-speaking peoples. They don't want to kill necessarily any civilians down there. So rather than go after the cities like World War II and annihilate the cities, level Kiev, level Odessa, level any of them, they're trying now a very interesting tactic. They're taking the infrastructure down piece by piece, no electricity for half the country, and they can continue doing this indefinitely. And in a month with no electricity and no power to speak of, what is Ukraine, Western Ukraine, Nazi Ukraine? I call it Bolshevik Ukraine, but what's it going to be with no electricity for a month in the middle of winter? And that's what the Russians are doing. They're not killing civilians directly, but they're making it intolerable, it would seem to me, for the government to maintain much support, the alleged government.
Well, you know, in Kiev right now, there's electricity for 2 to 3 hours at a time, twice a day. That's the capital of a European country. And, you know, I mean, they have tents set up, you know, like on the Maidan where they used to jump and dance and where they did the coup back in 2014. Now they have tents set up where people can come in to get warm and, you know, charge their phones. You know, so it's very tough there. You know, people in America might not understand that, like, you know, the architecture in the main cities in what used to be the Soviet Union, they have these really big apartment blocks. They're 9, 15 stories tall. And, you know, it's like just, you know, hundreds of apartments in one building. But if you don't have electricity, first of all, if you live on the 15th floor, you're walking. The other thing is, if you don't have the central heat, which the heating in these cities is almost always done by a centralized water boiler that the city controls, and it puts hot water through the pipes and the radiators, and it warms up the whole city. There's not a way, you know, like say if somebody doesn't pay their heating bill, to turn off their individual apartment from heat, you know, like in the United States or something. But without the electricity, they can't heat the central water heating, which means that the apartments, you know, can become literally freezing cold, which means that they can't put water in the pipes or the pipes will burst.
Sure. Got it.
So you understand that we're talking about, you know, some person, a little old lady, some guy, whoever it is, the family, you know, they live on the 10th or 15th floor of an apartment, no heating, no light, no water, and they have to go up and down the stairs, you know, with, I mean, like a you know, every time you flush a toilet, you have to bring up, you know, a gallon of water, 5 liters of water just to flush the toilet. You know, not to mention, you know, what you drink, what you cook with, what you wash your hands with, what you wash your clothes with. You know, so, you know, it could be, you know, worse than the Dark Ages, you know, for these people.
And Yeah.
Then really,
I would say the Middle Ages are not a bad analogy here. That's where they're headed. And the Russians will continue to take their infrastructure down until it's going to become virtually intolerable. Europe is apparently really splitting in some areas over their continued support. Some are mm-hmm. steadfast. Some are saying, hey, this is just a loser. What are we doing? Blah, blah, blah. So you're going to have, I don't know how many millions live in the areas that are suffering now from a lack of power. But if this continues, and obviously it's going to, what are these people going to do?
Well, you know, again, it comes back to this depopulation plan, you know.
Because
I can tell
right.
you that, you know, hardships of this degree are going to take a lot of people's lives. And I mean, not just their lives, their will to live, you know. Because I
mean, that's a really important thing to say, and you're right. The will to live, you just get so beaten down. Everybody's got PTSD. They're tired of this. I'm sure many of them don't want anything to do with it anymore. I just have that sense. And yet, mm-hmm. the unfortunate aspect of it is that Washington and Brussels continue to push in more and more weapons of death. This thing has not stopped. The Brits are now saying we're going to send more accurate, I guess, artillery rounds. They've got another grade, the level that they can send mm-hmm. into the fight. I don't know if these are going to be fired from the 777s or whatever they are, the artillery pieces. But the other issue is these weapons that the Brits are going to be pushing in there have a range of 100 miles.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long range.
Yeah, I mean, and Russia has, missiles at least that can go even further. It's a senseless, useless escalation, prolonging the
yes.
inevitable from happening. I mean, and that's the thing. The people in Europe got to understand that what they're starting to suffer now, and which they're going to suffer a great deal more before this winter is over, it's not Russia doing it to them. It's their own
Russ? How can they miss that, really? They've got to know. It's their own stupid people. These evil, greedy oligarchs and all of their cronies. It's, as you said, it's the same group that's been running the world for a long time. And they're doing it here. And they don't care about the people. And the people have got to figure that out. Now, I don't know how they're going to do it, but it's got to change.
Well, I mean, if they want to survive, they have to, because, you know, that's, you know, it's like know your enemy, you know, and it's, I mean, as we talked about before, the entire energy crisis was caused by the European Union, not by Russia. You know, they had stable, long-term contracts. The European Union is the one that broke those contracts and demanded that the Russians sell the gas at market price. And when after the COVID lockdown thing went out and energy started back up, you know, the price went up like 10 times. And the Russians said, look, you took us to court to say that instead of a contract price of 250 per 1,000 cubic meters, you demanded that we sell it to you at the market price. Well, now the market price is $2,500. So if you want it, you're going to have to pay for it. And it's, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. and this, I mean, no one can be that stupid that they couldn't have seen that coming. And so the only conclusion is that the European Union, the people who control the European Union, did this on purpose in order to make a hardship for the regular people there. You know, I mean, and it's, you know, and things are getting hard, you know. I mean, with the rising prices, people have to either eat less or less quality of food, you know. I mean, they can't do the things that they used to do. It's a lower quality of life, you know. I mean, and it's, you know, it, and it goes from everything from medicine to clothing to, you know, how you get around. If you have a car, if you ride the bus or like that, you know, so this is the work of the rulers of the West, and they're doing it on purpose.
You couldn't say it any more succinctly. They are doing it on purpose, and it is the West, and there is still no sign of de-escalation, of withdrawing in any fashion from the brink of a massive war. The situation in Ukraine is fraught with the risk of World War III, and this comes from a top diplomat in Hungary, which has distinguished itself in many ways. Hungary is an interesting case. I don't know how much longer this can go on without something major happening. If I hate to say it, but if the Ukraine military somehow succeeds in taking the ZNPP, what is that? What are the effects of that going to be?
Well, I mean,
the Zaporizhia plan.
The chances of that happening are pretty remote. I mean, the Russians understand what a strategic target it is. They're going to do everything that they can to stop it. You know, I mean, short of having it, you know, explode. But I mean, if that happens, then the Ukrainians then control the biggest nuclear power plant in Europe. They can do what they want.
Yes.
With the plant, they can do what they want with the energy that's produced, including probably cut off to some degree the Donbass area, the area of, you know, of the eastern Ukraine.
Understood.
You know, and yeah. And something that's very, very interesting is you understand at the time, while there's a lack of electricity in Ukraine, if they control that power plant, they're not going to use it to get electricity back to Ukrainians. They're going to use it to sell electricity to the EU. I mean, and that's already done, and I mean, you know, agreed to and stuff. So, I mean, it's the rich people squeezing all the regular people all around the world, you know, to death.
Same old story. You got it. I don't know. I just wish I could see where this is going to go. Somebody suggested this could go on for another couple of years. Do you see that happening, Russ, as a possibility? Could this go on that long?
It's really useless to try and predict where it could go because there's so many wild cards in the deck, you know?
Fair enough.
It's like
sure.
It's like playing poker with, you know, jacks and twos is wild, you know. Then when you got that many wild cards, everybody gets four of a kind every hand, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, the idea of it going on for a couple more years is very fatiguing to me. You know, it's been a very tough year here in Donetsk for people. You know, people want to get this over with. The longer it goes on, I mean, it's like Sun Tzu said, no nation ever benefited from a long war, you know, and this war has been going on a long time. It didn't start in March of 2022. It started 8 years ago.
Yes, we well remember over here. I do anyway, for sure.
Yeah.
This is not. Let me rephrase this. Are you seeing anything yet that would suggest the reserve call-ups in Russia are manifesting on the battlefield, along the front lines?
Yes, I am.
Without giving anything up, what are you seeing? They say it was more than 300,000. They say it was at least 500,000. I don't know, but what are you seeing? And give us an overview.
300,000 that were called up. And another 200,000 or 300,000 that volunteered. So it's a hefty chunk. You know, these are good guys. I mean, they're green. I mean, of the volunteers, There's quite a few that do, you know, that did have some combat experience from here in Donbass or maybe Syria or something before. But, you know, there's a big chunk of those guys, and they're starting to get here. I mean, when I go out to Petrovsky District near the front on the edge of the city of Donetsk, where our house is, I mean, it's like half the people that you see out there now are wearing camouflage, you know. And so it's, I mean, Russia is going to win this war, dude. There's no doubt about that. I think that they understand, I mean, they understand that it's an existential fight for the future of Russia and humanity. And they also understand that that they have the ability to do it. And that, you know, the longer it goes on, the worse it is for everybody, the more risk there is of escalation beyond the point of no return. I mean, it's hard to say what the reaction of Ukraine and their NATO masters is going to be when Russia starts making real progress, real headway, which I would be, I would say, I mean, and I'm not making a prediction, but I can only say what I would do if I was in the position to make decisions about how to carry on this war to a satisfactory conclusion. Would be that the first thing to do is to reinforce and completely protect the nuclear power plant in Zaporizhzhia. Once that's, you know, completely secure, certain that it can't be at least taken control of. I mean, because unfortunately, with all the weapons that NATO has sent them, you know, there is the danger at any time, you know, that they can put, you know, enough artillery on that. I mean, and the actual reactors themselves are very, very strong. I mean, it's, they were built to, like, withstand the impact of a 747 or something, you know. I mean, so the reactors are strong, but the problem is there's a lot of spent nuclear fuel rods that are not in, like, armored buildings that could be hit and could release a lot of very dangerous radiation. I mean, and that remains a threat until, you know, until the Ukrainian army is moved back further than their longest range weapons and rockets, you know, that remains a very real threat. And they've proven already that they're crazy enough to do it, you know. So safeguarding the power plant is job one. Then from there to go ahead and close the circle, which they're working on right now, the Russians and DPR armies are beginning to close the circle behind the Donbass front, which includes Mariinka, Avdiivka, everything along the city limits. You know,
if they pull that off, Russell, they're going to have a big prize. There's a lot of men there.
Well, you know, we got a job for them rebuilding everything that they destroyed, man. So
I hear that. Yeah, and they should. They should. And that includes every mercenary there from every country, and there are a lot of them. A story yesterday, 1,200 Polish soldiers have died fighting in Ukraine, and they're going to be given American-style funerals. That was a story yesterday.
Well, I'm sure that'll make them feel a lot better.
A lot better. So, I mean, but there are, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that there's been cases where the Polish mercenaries actually got into firefights with, like, the Pravi sector and the Ukrainian Nazi battalions because the Polish were saying, hey, you're just sending us into the slaughter here. We're not going. And then the Nazis come up and say, you know, you're going or we'll kill you. And the Polish ended up killing a lot of Nazis themselves, you know.
I read that.
But, I mean,
that.
The numbers of mercenaries that have gotten killed is a lot higher than what is being published in the West. You know, it's something they really – I mean, the number of mercenaries that are there is something that the Western powers are trying to keep, you know, under their hat. But it's it's quite significant because the losses of the Ukrainian army have been so horrendous that you know, they have to be filled in from somewhere. You know, it's, I mean, they're bringing in the guys from ISIS in Syria, which have been here the whole time. I mean, mm-hmm. 2015, I was hearing, you know, Arabic and stuff on the Ukrainian.
You told me that on this program. I remember that.
Yeah.
You said they're here.
Fact, man, and it's,
yes.
I mean, they've had, you know, the guys from you know, Islamist terrorists from the first and second Chechen war, guys from Syria, guys from Afghanistan, you know, genuine ISIS head choppers have been working with the Ukrainians the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, and they're, you know, they're really brutal. They're the guys that, you know, along with their own trainers, which is the CIA, I mean, this is where the absolute brutality, you know, of the murders and tortures of civilians and prisoners comes from. You know, I mean, it's got to understand that, you know, the Nazi mentality, and I'm talking about like the US-EU Nazi mentality, is that the way to win the war is just to be, you know, the most horrible, brutal enemy that there is, and to just terrify people, you know, so that they become frozen in fear just at the idea, you know, or the sound of their name, you know. And this is, you know, where you get, you know, I mean, tortures that, you know, normal people can't even, you know, imagine that are going on. And it's, you know, it's real terrorism. It is, and it's taught to ISIS, just like it's taught to the Ukrainian Nazis, you know, by the U.S. CIA and special services that are, you know, the preeminent killers on the planet these days. And it's funny because, you know, what's his name? The Pope Francis, he made a statement the other day saying about how the Russian Chechens and Buryats, which is kind of like the Eskimos from Siberia, which are very, very tough fighters, but he's saying, oh, these are like evil terrorists and they're doing torture and murder and like that, which is a lie.
So it's all reverse, you know, projection of the truth. They turn everything
around.
And
it's also quite racist. But, you know, and Ramzan Kadyrov, the head of the Chechen Republic in the Russian Federation, came back with an answer, you know. And he said, and it's like, he's like, the Chechens, we're all Muslims here, you know. And we treat our enemies with respect. It is against Islamic law to kill someone who's surrendered. You know, we do not, and this is the most important thing he said, and I'm quoting right here, we do not start fighting until after we have made an offer of peace first. And you remember, that's exactly what Putin did last year. You know, he said, look, this is getting serious. Let's, you know, have a reasonable negotiation. It discussed the security concerns,
right?
And you know, and we can sit down and talk about it and avoid this war. And you know, the U.S. NATO completely ignored it, and they went ahead with their plans, which was to invade the Donbass republics in the first week of March of this year, and the Russians coming in the last week of February, you know. Saved tens, if not hundreds of thousands of innocent lives. And so, I mean, so they made the offer for peace, and now, you know, it's war, and they're still fighting it in a very humane fashion. And I'm sure they will continue to do so, but they are going to win, and they're going to do what it takes to win.
I'm just... like you, I'm sure, former American, still an American to a degree, in your heart, we all are. We remember what this country was, what it had, the potential, the achievements, what it's lost, what has been taken from it, or what the American people have allowed to be taken from them. I'm not sure which is which anymore. But how much longer can this obvious brutality and human slaughter continue, entirely being provoked by Washington and Brussels? How much longer, realistically?
Well,
what's going to happen here?
it's either, I mean, you know, this is, like I said, this is a war of evil against humanity. This is a war of the 1% against the 90% of the human beings on this planet.
It's true.
And
yeah.
And it's a war, victory or death. Either one side or the other is going to win, and the side that doesn't win is going to be exterminated. So it's us or them. You know,
it almost seems like, I hate to say this, but I think a position could be staked out wherein it seems like this has to end up in a major conflagration, one way or the other. The Brussels-Washington military is not going to accept, when they can have other people fight and die, well, they're not doing it themselves. They're going to let this go on. And yet Russia is existentially threatened. I don't see a negotiated peace. I keep hoping. I keep thinking. There's nothing on this side that makes me think that Washington is going to ratchet anything down. It's only going to go up. It's going to continue to go up. They're sending them more sophisticated drones all the time. They're sending them more weapons, as I mentioned earlier, artillery shells, highly accurate. Something has to happen. Will Putin get to the point where the existential threat to Russia overrides his brilliant and legendary diplomacy? Will he have to do things like level Kiev, level Odessa? I know they don't want to. Level Kharkov. I know they don't want to. What's going to happen here? And I'm throwing these out rhetorically. You don't obviously have the answer. But, I mean, these are questions that I ask myself, that I read other people asking. How much longer can this useless slaughter of humanity continue?
Well,
without World War III coming about, I guess that's the ultimate.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where it's headed unless something changes. And what needs to change? And, you know, to some degree, we're starting to see it in Europe now. You know, I mean, there have been some really huge, you know, multi-hundred thousand people protests in multiple EU countries, you know, in the last month or so, you know, against the war, against, you know, spending money on Ukraine when they don't have enough for their own people. And that needs to happen in the United States, too, in a big, big way. You know, when people finally either, you know, understand or face the fact, you know, that, you know, it's their life that's at stake. You know, I mean, it's their children's
future. It is. And they're being kept from that realization by the mass media here. It is the control here now, Russ, you wouldn't believe it. The people are on their phones all the time, escaping that way, or they're staring at CNBC thinking they're being informed. It's just pathetic. The American people have lost a lot of their character, their intelligence, their logic. They're in trouble. Because partly, many of them are sick from these shots. They've been made ill. They've been injured.
You know,
they don't want to leave home. They don't want to get involved. They hurt. They don't feel good. I'm not excusing anybody. I'm just telling you, that's the situation here.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to just mention, that reminds me, bro. I saw the other day, I watched this documentary. I don't know if you've seen it, Died Suddenly.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, that's, I mean, that's some
I know
pretty,
all about that. Right. Our listeners know all about that. We've been on that for nearly 2 years now. And they're finally coming out with it to the degree you saw. And that's all true. I can explain to you exactly where those clots are coming from, how they're being formed, why they're being formed. I know, we know, and the listeners to this program know. There were some unanswered questions there. There was material left out that should have been put in. But whatever. On balance, it was the truth. and it needs to be talked about a lot more. That's just one of many ways that spike protein in that injection can kill. Just one.
Yeah. So what's interesting about the thing that reminded me is how hard they worked to suppress it as soon as it came out, you know?
You got it.
I mean, it's censorship is the enemy of the truth.
Censorship is the enemy of humankind. You got it. Yeah. Russell, thank you, my friend. You take care of yourself. Be safe there. I know you'll do whatever
Always
it takes.
Always good talking to you, Jeff. Take care. You guys be safe there, too. Good luck.
Okay. Thanks, Russ. Good night. Okay, there you go. Russell Bentley. And there's information right from the front. He's there. A lot of the columnists, and there are some good ones. Colonel McDonald. I guess there's two or three that are good now as well. But anyway, Russ is there. So you can take that to the bank, as it were. All right. We will be back tomorrow night, Wednesday already. Thanks for being here tonight. Take care. Talk soon.